What's up, Turnkey family? This is episode 15 of the Turnkey Brothers podcast, brought to you by Boise Turnkey. And if you are on iTunes or Spotify, close that app, get on YouTube. You're gonna want to watch this one visually.
We've got some great guests for you today, guys. It's not our normal guests that we have on the show, okay? These are three personal friends of ours that we bring in that we've spent our real estate investing career with from day one. And we have grown as a group. And I'm so excited to bring them on here today to share with you guys, because we get into how they did their deals. And I would like to segue that into talking about them specifically. Kyle, for example, well, all three of them, they were all Apache pilots first. Second, they were all Blackhawk pilots. Okay, that's a feat in of itself. When I think about a career, like, that's the pinnacle of my career, right? And then finally, we even had one that decided, you know what, I'm going to go a step further and I'm going to become a C-12 pilot in the Army. They are going to talk about how important it is to invest in assets, to invest in your financial freedom, to invest in education on how to move forward for your family and your family's financial future. I couldn't be more proud, and I'm so excited to share them with you today.
And this one goes long, so we're going to get right into it.
All right. It's so great to have you guys here today. Welcome to the podcast. This is a very special podcast to me because I get to bring in not only three of my, probably my best friends here in Idaho.
Breast friends.
We're off to a good start.
But we're going to talk about what it's like to get started in real estate. And I have been with you guys for the entire journey. You guys have been with me. And for those of you who are listening, like, this is the group that really, like, got it started. I'm really honored to bring them here today and to hear their story, because I think you're going to find that it's super relatable. And with that being said, if you guys could tell us a little more about yourselves, Kyle, why don't you kick us off?
I think we were talking about it before the show started, but back after the crash of 2008, when the market was at its lowest and it was the best time to buy, I had $40,000 in the bank. I just got back from a year in Iraq, and I didn't know anything about real estate and didn't even think about spending on real estate. So I partied that away. And a couple years later, met my wife, Kaylin, and we ended up going to Alabama for flight school. While we're down there, we started watching DIY Network and HGTV. Started thinking about remodeling a house. So after we came back, our goal was to buy a house and flip it. And so that was the first time our interest in real estate. From that house, it's been our absolute best investment we've ever done. From that, we've been able to buy a cabin, turn that one, that first house, into a rental, and then we bought another house we're living in. So,
all right, I want to talk a little bit about the first deal that you did. So you said you were watching videos, you were watching DIY shows on how to do this. Where did the idea even come from of, like, hey, this, we should flip a house, so we should, like, remodel it and sell it? Where did that idea even come from?
So it actually started with Dave Ramsey. So I had a buddy in flight school that basically gave me the Financial Peace University. And we started watching him. I was always pretty good at keeping, you know, debt free. Met my wife, she had some student loans and stuff like that. So we really were like, all right, we're gonna pay off all this debt. We don't like debt at all. So we're like, let's try to stay out of debt the rest of our lives. We ended up paying off all of her debts a couple years later. So Dave Ramsey's, you know, mm-hmm. his program works, but when we're thinking about the DIY though, the purpose of it was to flip a house, force equity into it, sell it, roll that equity in the next place, do that a couple times until we get to our dream house that would be paid off.
Okay. Gross. So that leads me to my next question. So specifically real estate was because you wanted to flip homes to earn the income to purchase your dream house.
Yes. Yeah. We saw the potential to make money outside of our normal jobs.
That's did awesome. You actually flip that, like sell it, or did you burr it? You said that you turned that into a rental property, right?
Yeah. So we bought it in 2015. Mm-hmm. And our total thought was like, all right, let's flip this house and let's sell it, move to the next place and roll that equity. Well, come time to sell it, I'm starting to look at the market, and that house would have made us $100,000. Like, mm-hmm. So 2015 to 2020, we'd flipped it, and we're like, all right, we got $100,000 we can roll into the next place, and that could take our mortgage down, you know, $200-$300. Yeah. Like, that'd be awesome, right, for the next house. But then we're like, what if we rent it, though? So the current rental market was $100 per square foot. We could rent it for $2,000. We were going to make, after putting aside money for maintenance, paying all the, you know, insurance and stuff like that, we were going to make $700. So would I save $200 on the new place or make $700? So we started really looking at it like that. Like, if we held on to this, it'd be a good investment for later. So
right. And that's just cash flow. Did you even look into like depreciation or appreciation or the other advantages to owning real estate?
That ended up being motivation to start learning that stuff.
Okay.
Because, like I said, our initial intent was just, you know, roll the equity. Once we became, you know, slumlords, we like to call it. Once we became property owners, we're renting out something. We're like, oh, there are tax benefits to it. I don't think we've fully realized all the tax benefits to it, but we have written off quite a bit of upgrades on that house and in our current house.
Okay, so how many properties do you own now?
So total three. We live in one. We got a long-term rental and a short-term rental.
Nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that because you guys didn't know what 100% what the plan was going to be going in. You just thought that this was a good idea and I should try it.
Yep. And just a quick note on when we were going to sell it. That $100,000 seemed pretty awesome to have, you know, cash in hand, because we also could have just kept that, you know, spent it, had fun. At the exact same time, I was working as a maintenance supervisor, and one of my employees was selling his house, and he had made $85,000. He walked away $85,000 cash in the bank, and he's like, oh man, I'm gonna buy a side by side. I'm gonna upgrade my truck and all this stuff. And I was telling him my situation. He's like, you should totally do it. You know, you could buy a side by side. And I was like, I don't know. Well, 2 years after that, my house had appreciated so much that now I was able to do a cash out refi on that property for 80% loan to value.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to get $121,000 in the bank. And that's actually what I used to get my short-term rental.
That's awesome. And I'm assuming you're cash flowing on your short-term rental now. So
absolutely.
You have two cash flowing, and also you're generating new properties out of that.
Absolutely.
Oh.
And well, yeah, right now we're basically saved up and postured to, we're starting to look for our next place. And it's mostly due to the fact that now we have a bunch of equity.
So you were able to keep your first house too, which is awesome. And I want to relate this back to Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University. For those that are listening, that's a great place to get started when it comes to learning about finances and becoming debt-free. I would say the graduate course of the debt snowball is the cash flow snowball. And the cash flow snowball is what you experienced. You bought a property that you fixed up, and instead of selling it, now you're using it as rental property, producing cash flow every month, which also you found a way to leverage that property to buy you another cash-producing property.
Which is the equity snowball. So there's way more snowballs that you can get down on this. But enough with you, Kyle, because your voice is way too good. Listeners are probably need a break at this point. So we'll bring on Bryson.
I'm already tired of hearing Kyle talk.
Me too. Dude, you don't have a mic. You got to get into the mic. Yeah. Come on.
I'm already tired of hearing Kyle talk.
I got
that. Let's go, Bryson.
We don't want to hear from that guy.
Tell us about you, man.
Bring us up to speed.
Yeah. Well,
your hair looks great today, by the way.
Thanks. I didn't realize these podcasts that people
video?
Listen to on
there's cameras.
On there's cameras.
Yeah.
I just
it's right
decided.
Here, by the way, if you want to look
oh,
into
I've
our audience.
Oh, I've looked at it a couple times. Like that's five right there. Hey, yeah. How's it going, everybody?
You can either look in the camera or in Matt's eyes.
Well, now I'm just doing this awkward thing where I'm like I'm staring at the table and not the camera, so I don't know what to focus on. I started quite a long time ago, actually. I'm 34 now, and I bought my first house when I was 21. And I waited a long time. And the only reason why I bought a house because I surrounded myself by a bunch of people that knew what they were doing. And like, hey, you got money in the bank because you've been saving for a while and you haven't been doing anything but living on your parents' couch. Go buy a house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. I bought a house. And
it's that easy, guys. I don't know what you guys are waiting for.
Yeah,
but
it's literally that easy. Save money, buy assets. Yeah. Doesn't work out that way all the time. But I sat on it for a while. I ended up going to Army Flight School. and rented it for a little while. And I saw very quickly, hey, that makes you money. If you buy a house and you have a low mortgage payment, rent it out for more. Hey, I get extra money month to month. That's neat. Still didn't think anything about it. It just started happening. And yeah, I got super lucky with that. I came back and I found out that I missed out on some city developments that were going on. And they started building quadplexes directly behind that house. And I got pretty upset about it. I'm like, I don't want to live here. So I sold that place. And then I realized when I sold it, hey, I got a ton of cash. I made a lot of money by holding on to this thing for a while and then just riding out the market, you know. So found a place that I really liked in Boise that had some land around it. And it was a fixer-upper property. And my parents had always done sweat equity projects. You know, they'll buy a house, fix it up, and then sell it later on. Well, they never held on to them. And then once I started seeing friends doing this whole thing, holding on to the properties and turning them into rental properties, I'm like, hey, that seems kind of cool. I didn't do anything about it. You know, that was years ago. And yeah, I was
none
like,
of us ever do anything about it.
That's cool that you're doing that, but I'm not going to do that thing.
Yep.
So bought that home in 2017 for a fairly decent price. And all of a sudden, everybody wanted to move to the beautiful metropolis of Boise. And that's when we got super curious in the local economy. Like, well, why is everybody wanting to move here? I mean, it's a great place. We ended up going on a trip one weekend. And we had set ourselves up for success. I knew I had all this equity in this house. So we pulled out a home equity line of credit, just kind of gear ourselves up just in case something came through. Got back from this trip to Oregon, and our neighbors came walking over and let us know that their mother had passed away. And they were their caretakers for their mom, who was my next door neighbor. And, you know, we sat there for a little bit, talked to him, and, you know, it was a horrible thing because she was a sweet lady. But after they left, Daisy and I started talking about it a little bit. We're like, you know what, we're set up to be able to possibly take over this property. And we let it kind of cook for a few days, you know, being nice to the family and everything, kind of leave them alone. Then I walked over there one night, and they had all the brothers and sisters and everybody together in one spot. And I'm like, hey, to help alleviate this, I'm ready to go to purchase this property from you guys if you'll let me. And I'll take it from you without you guys having to do anything else. Just take what you want, do your estate sale, and then I'll purchase it from you and then do my thing, right? And yeah, we purchased it from them off the market and did some creative deal. And had it for a while. And then a good chunk of time later, we ended up turning it into an Airbnb, which is our first Airbnb. Hopefully we can get some more after that.
And what your first investment property?
My first investment property, okay. Yeah.
What kind of renovations do you have to do to that property?
Oh, we did everything. So when we got the place, it was a family home. They didn't care about trying to keep up with times or anything with it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was super cute from the 1950s on. You know, it still had some original shag carpet in certain rooms and stuff, and there was animals living there, so there was all sorts of damage to all the property. So we were doing things like replacing the floors, walls, whole sheetrock panels were coming off and getting replaced, texture paint. Fixtures, new electric, running, you know, new outlets and that kind of stuff, you know, DIY type things. And we learned how to do all that from HGTV watching home flipper houses and stuff. So my wife and
YouTube University.
And University of YouTube's huge. It is huge. And then, yeah, we just kind of worked through that for a while and got the place looking pretty cute. And we decided to go from there. We got pretty lucky. They ended up having to do HVAC and a new roof before we bought the place. So we didn't have to deal with that. And they had taken out... Oh, timestamp. Mm. They had taken out a reverse mortgage on that property to be able to take care of some of these things. And that was just a minor hiccup in the whole deal coming to a close. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at with that. So now we've got our primary residence, then we got our Airbnb, and it's cash flowing.
Like sky's the limit from here, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So a couple things I want to talk about is accidental real estate investors out there. Yeah. And there are a lot of people out there that are like this, and maybe you guys were part of it too, but you specifically talked about a story where you went away to flight school, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this was a period of time where you knew you were going to be gone for, what, 18 months or whatever it was? So you're like, well, what am I going to do with this house that I have to make a payment on? You know, I've got to go live elsewhere, but then still make a payment on my home. And, okay, maybe I'll just rent it out. And that's when you found, okay, that's cool. You know, rent it out. Someone pays for it. But you don't understand anything about it.
No.
It wasn't until later that you saw the power of doing it. So becoming an accidental investor is definitely a thing out there. It's just when do you realize that you've become that investor and can leverage that power moving in the future? And it sounds like that's what you did with your first investment. Like, this is a thing. We're moving forward. We got a HELOC. And I bring this up because for those who have situations that come up, like you had your neighbor come up and they talked about, you know, hey, unfortunately, you know, my mom and dad passed away. It's a very unfortunate event that you were able to bring into a positive light for them. Did you give them fair market value? Sure. But
oh, yeah.
You gave them the freedom of time and you allowed them the grieving period for them, you know, to move on and for you to get your first investment. That's a win-win in my opportunity.
Oh, it was great.
So being prepared.
How did that come about? Like, did you drop hints that you're interested in purchasing the property, or did they just come by and they're like, yo, mama is no longer.
No, not at all. Yeah. So I guess I didn't touch on renovating our place. So when we bought my house, they had gotten it. They did a lot of the surface level type stuff. You know, they put new paint, new carpet in the place, but they didn't solve a lot of the structural issues, anything on the property. It looked great from, you know, driving by, and it's like, oh, cool. This thing has a sign in the front yard with some little pictures you could pull out of a little plastic sleeve. But once they got inside, you could smell the smoke. They'd been smokers for a long time. And then some of the things that they'd done were just really cheap, quick fixes. Mm-hmm. And we walked through the house, got to the backyard, and I just saw a jungle of weeds and bush and just all the stuff that needed to be done. I'm like, I'm pretty handy with chainsaw. I think I could take care of this. And we ended up, you know, getting some sweat equity into this thing, just completely revamped our property. And we turned the backyard into basically our sanctuary. You know, we were able to just get a lot of grass, get a patio in, and make some things. We were able to host other friends and family. And they saw that. They saw what we were doing, how much care and love that we were putting into our own home and for our family. They're willing to work off market with us and to be able to go through with that. So I didn't have to drop any hints. There was a lot of, it's making friendships, you know, with your neighbors for one. And then if they see that, they'll keep you in your back pocket, and it makes it a lot easier to have those discussions later on. So it wasn't awkward at all for me to go knock on the door at 8 o'clock at night and say, hey, how's everybody doing? Let me know if you need anything, type of thing, right? If this is going to help you at all, I'll buy the property from you and take care of everything. Just let's keep going. So it worked out that way. They saw what we were doing on a day-to-day basis, and they just liked us as people too.
I want to bring this home for the listeners, because that's a super important story that you just told. And it may not seem significant telling it, but what's amazing about it is that you never know what you're going to find. So whether you're going to a real estate meetup, whether you're hanging out with friends, whether you're putting yourself out there, let's say you're saying, hey, you know, I'm a real estate investor, I'm interested in real estate, or whatever it is you do, like, you never know what you're going to find until you put yourself out there, you know, and give back even for that matter. And by doing so, people come to you and they see that this is a person who can maybe take care of a situation. And that's how you start to find deals. You know, it doesn't happen overnight.
We actually hit on this on our last podcast. We were with Kylie and Amanda. We were chatting with them about networking and how, like, any conversation or any interaction with another human could totally alter and change your life forever. And it sounds like that's one of them, when that was never your intent. It wasn't a networking thing. It was just you going out there and doing what needs to be done. But now I see that Jordan has something to say, so lay that wisdom on us.
No, he was just wanting to take the microphone because he thought it was his turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do have something to say, but it's awkward because I don't have a microphone.
Oh, okay,
but
go for it.
So let me cut you off real quick. Yeah. So just for the listeners at home, there won't be any photos on it, but to paint a picture of what his house looked like before and after is, like, the house was decent. The yard looked like you'd maybe park, like, an old rusted car in there and leave it. and now it's a place that, like, you would rent out for a wedding. It's beautiful. The amount of work he's put in that backyard is amazing. Thanks, so I couldn't imagine just, like, the neighbors looking over, like, next door, you know, the grass is suddenly legitimately greener on the other side. And they're like, wow, this guy's doing something good. They knew that he'd take care of, you know, their family property. So, it you know, his story is pretty cool. Yeah.
I think it's important, though, to make, you know, I only thought of this idea just so Jordan couldn't have his little piece of fame. And that goes just being a good person if you have a W-2 job or whatever, just in your day-to-day life, letting your interests be known. You know, that's going to spring connections you don't really know about, you know, and it's going to, you keep talking about the snowball effect, doesn't have anything, or not necessarily just focuses on, like, what you could do with your assets and stuff, but friendships and just letting everybody know what your passions are. They can help build you up.
Yeah. Yeah. And investor, people look at investors as like these big bad people and they're just here for money and capitalism and they're going to ruin everything. But like, this is a perfect example. Like investors are just, they're just us. You're looking at them right now.
They're your neighbors.
Yeah.
They're just your neighbors.
They're the people that are listening right now. You're probably listening to this show right now thinking like, yeah, I've only done one or two deals. But because you've done those deals, you've rehabbed the property. You've brought it into a brighter light. The grass is greener, finally, on the other side. And you're bringing your community up at a whole. And it doesn't happen without people like us willing to make that sacrifice of our time, effort, and energy to do the thing.
Well, you said something earlier when you wanted us to come talk with you guys. It's not, I know, I keep talking, I'm sorry. It's not scary.
Your microphone privileges.
Huh? I know. It's not scary, right? A lot of people just don't want to do it because either, A, they don't understand step one to get into the process. Mm-hmm. Finding money, you can just educate yourself a little bit and you can find, you know, options for you, what's going to work best for you. But it's really not that bad because the people that you're going to be doing this process with are professionals and they're going to be able to step you through it. And at the end of the day, if you can't do it, you can't do it. You tried. You learned something new, and then you figured out something you're going to have to fix with either yourself or your situation. And, yeah, it'll work out. It will work out.
Yep.
Yeah. And I just want to say before we go any further, like, guys, before this, we were chatting about not talking over each other. And, like, Jordan, I get it, man. You have something to say, but can you just please wait your turn?
I will wait my turn.
Nope. I got something else. Hold on. I knew this one microphone was going to be an issue. Yeah.
So I was going to say 15 minutes ago that the moral of your story was just be a good neighbor. Be a good human.
Be nice.
But you're not nice or a good human. Hey, no, that's not true.
What color is that again?
Maroon?
Oh, burgundy.
Burgundy? Called it. I don't know. Cute. This is like the second time I've ever worn. Probably the last.
Tell me about your house.
All right. Is it my turn to talk?
Let's hear it. Yeah.
My name's Jordan Dosh, and I'm a real estate noob. I don't feel like we didn't really do a whole lot of intros about our background or anything. We just kind of jumped into it.
We'll be sure to add that.
Yeah, okay. We'll just swing back.
Do you
want to
tell everybody
around. You're
a pilot once?
Well, if they haven't figured it out by now, all of us in the room are pilots except for one.
Yeah, I just control you guys.
You control pilots.
Yeah,
I
just control. We all support.
Special forces.
We all support people like him.
Yep. So,
you guys are my taxi drivers.
Yeah.
Highly trained taxi drivers.
So my first deal. We're gonna go intros or our first deal.
I want to hear about the W-2 side of your life and how you got from like working a career into investing into your financial future for your family.
And then
we'll work our way back through the casting couch. And for you kids at home that don't know what that is, ask your parents.
Oof. I was afraid this couch was gonna be black. Luckily, it's gray.
Your dad's going to know for sure.
All right, so we'll start with my first deal. It all goes back to your product of your environment, and I knew nothing about real estate and cared nothing about real estate until Mr. Matt Osinicki started this book club and came in and got everyone together and was super enthusiastic, had some big DE going in there, and got us all kind of interested in real estate.
And for the listeners, it was a couple's goal retreat, not a book club.
Okay. It started with goals retreat.
Yeah, we were setting goals.
Morphed into kind of a book club.
Yeah.
Then to a financial kind of club.
Yeah.
And then a real estate club, really.
Yep.
It's to where it is now.
We just had our last one like this weekend, which was really cool.
Fantastic weekend.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about that after.
Yeah, and we should highlight shout out that property you guys stayed at because it was a sick property, right?
It was a very nice house.
I want to meet the guy that made that deal. Punch him square in the face.
It's great to meet you.
We gave him an upper decker in his upstairs bathroom.
Did you?
Yeah.
You and Kyle?
Well, you gave my property manager that.
Yeah. TJ has to clean that.
For those that are listening, he owns the property. I manage the property.
We stayed it this weekend. We trashed the place.
And that's where we stayed this weekend.
So Gina and I, my wife, we bought our first house 2017. And at the time, I was kind of very skittish on money and finances, and I was super worried about having to pay a high mortgage. So I basically told Gina, I was like, our cap for a house is $250,000. That's as much as I feel comfortable buying 2017. So she found a house for $250,000, and we bought it, moved into it. Everything was great. fast forward now.
It's a nice house.
It's a nice house. We've done a lot to it.
Yeah.
But as the market just went crazy, the house almost doubled in appreciation, right? Like it's been awesome. So we buy a house, 2017, have a, you know, we both have nice W-2 jobs, but don't think anything about real estate. Don't even care about real estate until you come in, start this couples retreat, start talking about it. And then roughly around the same time, Kyle's wife becomes a realtor, and it's like I'm starting to be surrounded by realtors and by people talking about real estate. You know, Bryson bought his house in 2017.
You can't quit us.
Yeah. And these two guys start doing all kinds of renovations, and I'm like, I'm not good with saws and all this kind of stuff. And so I'm not even thinking about like flipping a house or doing anything crazy like that because it's just over my skill set. At that point, didn't want to get into the YouTube HDTV, figuring that stuff out.
Do you know what that means?
No.
He's more like
Home Goods TV.
Queer Eye for the Straight Guy kind of vibe.
Is it because of my
shoes?
That's
the vibe I'm getting.
Is it because of my shoes?
It's the burgundy box that he has on.
Haters gonna hate. So, anyways,
your shirt.
Almost.
I did coordinate.
I think it clashes actually. Oh no, the brand, the logo up there,
and the buttons.
Awesome. Back to real estate.
Yeah.
Travis Matthews shoes for the listeners out there. Anyways.
What's your fit right now?
The link is
look
not
good,
down
below. Yeah. Look good, feel good.
So we have our house. Now I'm surrounded by a bunch of people talking about real estate, getting me jazzed up about real estate. And so Kaylin, Kyle's wife, was actually our realtor. And roughly, so we started looking at possibly moving into a new house, right? We were going to rent a Barletta house. We had done a cash out refi in 2022 and got an amazing interest rate. And then we got some cash out to remodel our next house that we're going to buy. We're going to furnish it. So we start looking at houses, and the houses are super high because we want to move into something that is nicer than what we currently have. And we realized that that's kind of way over our budget. So we kind of pull back a little bit and go on vacation. And Kaylin hits us up on vacation. And she's like, hey, have you guys thought about getting a cabin out in Garden Valley? And you guys had bought one 6 months earlier. We're
it's
like,
not,
yeah.
Not a competition.
Not a competition. But so.
I got nothing.
So she starts looking out in Garden Valley for us for a place, finds a cabin. We put in an offer, it gets rejected. We put in another offer that she helped coaches us on, and it gets accepted. And next thing you know, 2 months later, we're moving into our very first property, and we have a cabin up in Garden Valley that we moved into for as our primary residence. We teleworked a lot from it, and then realized it's a little bit difficult to telework that much. And so we've really started to Airbnb it out when we're not staying up there, and it's done pretty good, right? Like we started Airbnb-ing it in October, and that's kind of the slow season up there. So I'm really jazzed up and excited to see that how well it does during the summer coming up.
I want to hit on two things. So first, you put in an offer, it got rejected, and then your real estate agent, you said, coached you up. Mm-hmm. Are you insinuating that your real estate agent knows more about offers and putting offers in and getting offers accepted than like the layman person out there that doesn't know anything at all? That's just the client and goes to them and pay and has the seller pay them.
Is this
to
a shameless plug?
I feel like that's directed towards me, but I'm just ignoring it. No, I'm the guy that it's right. Like you could look at something on Facebook Marketplace and it would be $200 and be like, will they take 150 though?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she gave us the offer and I was like, well, that's on the high end of our budget. Let's come in. I think I like shorted it like 80 mm-hmm. or something like that. It was
$80.
$80.
It came down from 725 to 690. And then I was like, let's go 590.
You guys played a lot of games on that one, didn't you?
We did.
I'm glad I wasn't your real
estate. And they rejected it. And Kaylin was like, I don't think that's going to get accepted. And I was like, we'll see if he wants to sell. It's been on
it's
the market.
It's your time, not mine.
Yeah.
So
people's money.
It had been on the market for like 75 days. And I was like,
okay,
why isn't it selling?
So full circle, we have our group, you know, we're talking about real estate and stuff. And so when he's suddenly in this predicament, he calls me up and he goes, "Hey Kyle, what would you do in my situation?" Right? And I just
did I call
like,
you?
Yeah, you did. And you're like, should I pursue this? It's above budget. It's, you know, it's got its perks, but it's got its cons. Like, what would you do? And I was like, just do the math. Trust the math.
Ooh, I have a whole nother story about the math. So, anyways, I think we ended up offering $650, and he accepted, and we moved in. But backtrack to the math. So, Bigger Pockets. You introduced me to Bigger Pockets. Mm-hmm. They have their cash flow calculator on there, and I bought into it, did a subscription because I wanted to use that calculator. So I started doing the numbers on deals as we started to get interested in Garden Valley and trying to find houses. It's actually when we started looking at houses around Boise and the prices were crazy. I started to do the math on deals to see if it would cash flow if I was going to Airbnb it.
Yeah. So that calculator specifically that you're talking about is a great tool, and this is why I believe it's a great tool. And it's not because of the numbers, and you get to see, is this property going to make money? Is that property going to make money? No. The most important reason why that tool is so powerful is because it gets you in the mindset that you're going to start looking at properties, you're going to identify how much they are, you're going to identify how much you can afford, and you're going to identify how much cash you need to bring home. And I think that's what's most important. So if you're looking to get started and you don't know where to begin, at least begin by underwriting deals, by finding properties, seeing how much they're going for, and if you can or can't afford it based on your family situation. And it sounds like that's exactly what you did. And furthermore, I wanted to fully bring everything that you just said to a head, and that is you didn't know what you were doing. You were afraid of getting in, you were living your career, your W-2, and you didn't know who to talk to. And all you had to do was surround yourself with the right people.
Surrounded myself with people I trusted.
Mm. Yes, definitely.
That was the key.
Because yep. Education mitigates risk, right? Mm-hmm. And you're educated with the right people. You fact check them. You've been around them for a while. And it allowed you to finally get your first deal done. And it doesn't matter when that deal happens, but it happened for you. And that's what's most important. And now you're addicted and you want to do more.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're positioned right now and looking for our next property.
Yeah. So that being said, talking about like fear and getting in, you guys have all just gotten into the market essentially. Maybe it's been a couple years or not, but it's fresh in your mind. Can you guys, you three gentlemen on the casting couch, talk to us a little bit about fear and what it's taken you guys, you know, to get here?
I've got an excellent story about that. So to bring back, my employee that was selling his place, he made $85,000. I was looking at, I could sell it, make 100, right? And so I was like, oh man, am I making a mistake not having 100 grand in my pocket, you know, selling my first place that I had.
How much is a side-by-side worth today, by the way?
Depreciates, I believe, 50% first time you drive it.
Yeah.
especially if Matt McKee drives it.
How many times the first time you roll it?
Yeah, I mean, no regrets.
It's not a golf cart.
Yeah. So...
I've crashed a couple of those.
So I remember thinking like, all right, I'm missing out on a lot of money, you know, and potential for, you know, pretty comfortable life, maybe an upgrade on my wife's vehicle, the normal stuff. So we're like, all right, let's rent this property. And other than, you know, a few select friends, we didn't have this group yet. And everybody else, my family, a lot of other friends, coworkers were like, you're crazy. Do you know what it's like to be a rent, you know, to rent out a property? Like, you're responsible for everything financially, and it's a nightmare.
All the clogs, toilets.
And here's the thing. So the house that we renovated, we stripped that thing down to the studs in a lot of key areas like bathrooms and the kitchen and all that stuff. I remember when the kitchen was subfloor and, you know, two copper pipes sticking up, and that was it, you know, and there was no ceiling or anything. Like, it was down to the studs. So we knew that all the plumbing was good. All the electric was good. Like, we redid everything. The only thing we couldn't see was the plumbing as it's draining out, going into the concrete, and then out to the street.
I was going
to
say, didn't the house have a flooding issue?
So fast forward to we rent the place. We get a renter, you know, renters pretty quick. They're actually family friends, which is pretty cool because, you know, you can help out family that way and, you know, give them a good deal. So we rent it out to them. And 3 weeks later, my wife and I are taking a much needed vacation. We go camping, of course, you know, crappy cell phone service. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, finally we can relax. That's when we get the phone call. You know, it's cutting in and out. And it's like, hey, by the way, the basement's flooding. And we're like, oh, great. You know, so, you know, long story with that, but it ended up being costing us $3,300. Our very first month, we have this huge, you know, like emergency. We're on vacation. All the things that people said were going to happen as a landlord did happen. And guess what? I just was patient. I made a couple calls and somebody went out and fixed it. We spent a little bit of money and we all lived happily ever after. I mean, it really wasn't as bad as I thought. So it's kind of nice getting that experience right when we started renting it out.
Yeah. So you had a problem and all you did was just find a solution.
I just made a couple calls.
Because like the biggest thing getting in is like, what if something happens? Like you were saying, what if the toilet breaks? How do you overcome that fear and get in the right mindset that this is a good idea to move forward and to have like assets?
You just got to try. You really just got to try. Honestly, if stuff like that happens, if it's something simple, I don't mean to hijack it. I'm sorry. Am I hijacking?
You're doing good?
Nope.
You're hijacking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. University of YouTube.
9/11. Never forget.
Start there. Hashtag
never
forget. You're going to mess up in that process, right? And how many projects did you do in the house that you had no idea what to do when you started doing them?
All of them.
All of them, right? And then what did you do? You went out there, you looked at it, you're like, I have no idea what to do. What's the next step? Talk to somebody that's probably done it before, right? And then it snowballs once again into more knowledge.
And that's a side perk, by the way. So I lucked out, won the lottery with my in-laws, and my father-in-law used to build houses in California. Mm. So YouTube did help out a lot. You know,
hold on. Timestamp. We're going to have to edit out that California bit.
Oh, yeah.
Just kidding. Roberto's back there. I see him writing it down. He's like, oh, no. Yeah, let's get
punching the red button.
Yeah.
So one of the random perks that you see with projects like this is you actually become closer as a family. So I just want to plug that in there.
That is cool.
I wanted to say, like all of us have pretty unique experiences, being all from the military, and we have like the same experience in the room. And one thing that I think of is when somebody says like, what if this happens? Or what if in like that story where the first month you have your basement flooding ends up being $33,000 or $3,300, which at the end of the day, like that's Cossacks. You should have that in the bank. Maybe not your first month, but something I always think about is like, but did you die? And I don't think a lot of the listeners or a lot of people that I interact with have that mentality of like, they haven't had the experience where they've seen, you know, they've been in a hairy situation and there was actually life or death. So basement flooding, you figure it out. It's stressful. Yeah. The cell reception and being on vacation and having a different mindset and then getting ripped out of that scenario. And having to go into landlord mode, like that's unfortunate for sure. But looking back at it, and like, but did you die? You
know? So yeah, and my wife even had like a knee jerk reaction of like, oh no, we got to pack up and we got to go. Mm-hmm. And but then I was like, wait, calm down, like it's fine. Our tenants are fine. You know, there's just a little bit of water, and we just took a breath, thought about it. We're like, hey, you know what? Plumbing, that kind of stuff happens all the time. So they got 24-hour services. They got emergency services. Mm-hmm. They charge a premium, and they should because it's off, you know, hours, but it was fine. Like, you made a call to them, and they fixed it right up.
Yeah, touch it back to something you said. It's that mindset, right? Like, yeah, we are all military individuals and have overcome adversity and challenges throughout our life, and the more you do that, the more confidence that you get. And so it's having the right mindset. Well, how do you build that mindset? For me, it was education and environment. So surrounding myself with the right environment, but it's also doing my own education to read books, watch YouTubes. I was in Bryson's office all the time, just talking to him about all the projects that he was doing. Like, man, I'm never going to do that. Now what am I doing? I'm doing floors and I'm putting in water heaters. And I went to my friend's place, her husband's deployed, and I fixed her dryer for her and like YouTubed it. And it's just like taking opportunities to sharpen your tools and get smarter. And it's just like, you know, everyone's got their first real estate investment or real estate property that they buy, and then you just get smarter and you educate yourself more and more as you go through the process and buy more properties.
I'm glad we're talking about mindset here because you bring up a great point. You guys are W-2 employees, right? Not only are you W-2 employees, but you have the hardest side job, in my opinion, and that's like being a guardsman in the military. and having to give those hours, especially as pilots, because you have a requirement just like active duty does. So now you've got a full-time job and another full-time job, right? So
I call it a full part-time job.
A full part-time job, yes. So I want to direct this question specifically to Bryson because I feel like you
Quitter.
Do more work than anybody in this room combined. I can't tell you how many times I've seen a picture of you in your attic looking at pictures of egg cartons or tearing a wall down or doing a new project or fixing up your backyard. And you've come a long way, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But can you speak to the audience on what it's like to invest your time past that 40-hour work week, past that part-time job, and then finally invest in your family and your family's future? Because I would just want to sit on the couch and watch TV at the end of the day.
Sure, I don't know how many pictures I got from you at midnight in the middle of projects that you were doing. It's like, look at this. And I wouldn't get it till the morning because I go to bed at 10 o'clock.
Yeah. No, that was – and honestly, there was a lot of things that came to a head when all that was going on, and which ultimately led to me having to make a pretty tough decision back in July, which was ultimately getting out of the Guard. But I'll start from the beginning of it. I have a W-2 job, work for the Department of Defense doing acquisitions currently, right? And with that job, there comes certification levels you have to hit. So you're still going to schools or I was still having to go to schools for my W-2 job. He'd been there before in the past, so I had some cheerleader support there on the sideline for that. But we had I had a pregnant wife at home. I was working on my college degree. I was working on becoming pilot in command in the Black Hawk community. And then we had that opportunity arise to be able to buy that house. So on top of all that stuff, I'm like, here's this house and here's this opportunity. Let's go. And really what it comes down to is just being able to focus your time on what matters to you most. I wrote it out. I wrote it on a piece of paper, pros and cons for everything I was doing, everything that was eating up even a single second of my time. And I decided like what was going to be most important to me and to my family and to be able to continue on with where I see myself in like my 5, 10, 15-year vision, right? And at the end of the day, I was sacrificing a lot of sleep. You need sleep for everything in your life, longevity for whatever. And at the end of the day, that next door project I was working on, as soon as the girls went to bed, we'd take our little baby monitor, you know, and we'd set it up so we could see both of them. Because we had one, and then Daisy, like I said, was pregnant, and her and I would both go over there. I don't know how she did that, but we'd be working from 9 o'clock at night to like 2 a.m. every single day, just grinding it out. And I mean, it was I learned a lot of it, and I get enjoyment from being able to learn new tasks and skills, doing whatever it is. So I enjoyed it, but I had to take a good hard look once I started seeing, you know, that the house was bringing in quite a bit of income compared to what I was going to potentially be getting with the military. I had to make some pretty big decisions. I did almost 17 years in the National Guard, and I'm like, you know what? I got to do something different for my mental health and my physical health and my family. So I ended up pulling chocks from the military community and decided to keep pursuing what we're doing right now, which is whether it be real estate or other adventures. But that's where we're at.
I think that's a very empowering story because I'll go back to the couple's goal setting retreat. One of the things that we talk about and that and for those listeners who don't know what a goal setting retreat is, it's something that we got from The One Thing, the book The One Thing by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan. They started this goal setting retreat, Jay and his wife Wendy, and it really dives deep into finding out what's most important in your life and what goals you want to achieve. Not only what goals you want to achieve, but like individually and as a couple. Maybe they're spiritual, financial, family, tradition, and it really dives deep. And that's one of the things that we really want to touch on when we do these goal setting retreats. And I have found that in doing so, you guys have really been able to steer your ship and identify what's most important in your life specifically. And in doing so, it gave you the affirmation and the confidence to move forward.
Yeah, within this last goal-setting retreat, we talked about our goals, and family was the number one core value that Gene and I both shared. And the thing that real estate has done for us is it's invigorated us to go and start buying more properties to get more passive income, to essentially feel confident to leave our W-2 jobs and start having more real estate that provides an income. And it's proven difficult, right? Because Gina's not as excited about real estate. She's very risk averse still. And I pull a lot of my energy through my self-education and then through my peer group, you know, through you guys and talking about it and learning more about it and getting excited about it.
That's good. That's like checks and balances, right? You guys are a team because Gina's almost like the brake and you're the gas. And she's making you reassess and teach her and give her reasoning why this is like mitigating her risk, right?
Right. Yeah. So whenever I bring in, like I just went to City of Trees Investing 101 and I came back home and it was, you know, 9 o'clock at night and I'm all excited about real estate and figuring out creative investment and stuff like that. And we had talked about not purchasing another property for a few months. And so until we hit a couple goals and we were nowhere near those goals, financial goals that we've hit yet. And so here I am like talking 9:30 at night, going to bed about figuring out creative financing and purchasing our next property and what it would look like. And she's like, hold up, how are we gonna do that? And she starts asking the hard questions and I don't have answers for those yet. Mm-hmm. So now I need to go and do more education and figure out solutions to those problems and then bring back answers to those tough questions. And that's the great balance between the two is that she's very risk averse and I'm very just gung-ho, jump into it kind of thing. And so it's a good checks and balances to do more research than I probably would normally do before I'd kind of jump into
that's
something.
That's a good conversation piece to have because everybody loves a great career, whether you're an architect or you're a military career guy, you're a pilot, you're a doctor, you're a police officer, a fireman. Like these are very career-orientated fields where you have to spend a lot of time invested in learning your practice and learning your craft. And Gina specifically in the nursing area and you specifically in the aviation military area, like you have to spend a lot of time doing that. But over the past couple of years, we have found that whether it's inflation or government regulation or any stick that can be thrown in the spoke will mess things up. And it's important to have these backups because we have found that it is not safe to just have a normal day job anymore and that you do need backup plans if you are that person that requires that safety net. And for you guys, you have found that maybe this is the safety net we need moving forward.
100%. I mean, if you compare investing in the stock market versus compared to investing into a house, right? The stock market earns 7 to 10% annually.
If you're a good investor.
If you're a good investor, right? And I've lost a lot of money in the stock market recently. So just recently, I'm pulling that money out. And I'm putting that money towards a next property that I know that I'm going to hold on to for a long time. It's going to appreciate over a long time. And I'm going to get a lot more out of that that chunk of change than I would, you know, playing the stock market and losing.
These are everyday people. And I just want to bring a point out because I was just watching a video today from AJ Osborne. And he's amazing, by the way, because he brings out a lot of factual information and the numbers and the data. And he was saying that the average millionaire in today's market earns $77,000 a year salary. That's like most of us,
that's what
right?
their take-home is?
That's what their take-home is salary. But the difference is that they invest 30% of their income. And it's that sacrifice that they're making, that sacrifice that you guys have decided to make moving forward, you know, whether it's money and time, but just moving forward, knowing that these are the goals that you have and that you're dedicated and set out to achieve those for your family.
Yeah, and we can talk bonds, right? Bonds are the most would argue the safest form of investing. And we're seeing today that a lot of people who invested in bonds now because of inflation's higher than what those bonds were yielding. Those bonds now are worth less than a new bond. So people are selling at a loss. And now we have Silicon Valley Bank as today are going to go under. Like they're most likely the government's going to subsidize them and keep them afloat, but the bank's probably going to go bankrupt itself, and they're just going to bail out all of the investors in that bank. But we're seeing that already today, the safest form of investment, because it's a government-backed investment. I shouldn't have done that. It's a government-backed investment, is proving to be not a great investment. But real property is something you can stand in front of and defend yourself, and something that can yield. If your numbers work today, they're going to be great tomorrow. is a much safer bet, betting on yourself, you know, betting on your own acquisitions ability or your own ability to run numbers.
Speaking of betting on yourself, can you guys talk about how you guys bet on yourself now that you've realized like some of the goals that you have and things that you changes you need to make in your life to better your family's future?
Why are you guys looking at me?
You look like you want to talk.
I look like I want to talk. Yeah, betting on myself, it's me personally, I look at a problem and I don't like to be told that I can't do something, right? And overcoming fear or any of that kind of stuff just becomes a challenge. So I love challenges. So any of these real estate adventures or ventures that we've been on, to me, it's like the ultimate. You know, I see all these people becoming millionaires and I'm like, why the heck are they doing that? I know that guy just lost $50,000 in the stock market last week. Like, what? And it really comes down to educating yourself and really understanding how real estate is going to work for you. Yeah.
I was going to talk about real estate versus the stock market. And I actually have a pretty good story about it. My friend Jason bought a house post the 2008 crash. And his neighbor had bought the house previous to that. So his neighbor bought the house for like $240,000. Mm-hmm. And Jason bought it for $98,000 after everything's said and done, about $103,000, right? So this is actually what got me thinking about real estate as a potential for investing. His neighbor was kicking himself, just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe, like, I'm so upside down on this house. There's no way I can ever leave it. The value of, you know, his house had dropped, you know, $150,000 less than what he owed because they were the exact same house. It was a cookie cutter neighborhood. So I was living there as a roommate. So I head off to flight school. And just a couple years later, I come back and my buddy Jason ends up selling his house for, I think it was like $205,000. Like it was already starting to come back, right? Mm-hmm. And then fast forward to, you know, 2020, actually even up, you know, till like this year, that particular house, I was curious. So I looked it up and it was worth like $470,000. So over time, real estate's always going to be a good investment. Stocks, not so much, right? Like you were saying with bonds, you can get yourself in trouble because you could buy it thinking it's, you know, a great purchase, which usually they're stable. Interest rate spikes. Now you to sell them, you have to sell them at a discount, at a loss.
Right.
And so just like everything, the stock market, some you have to get educated in, like learn about it. Real estate, it seems like there's one factor that helps. If you make a mistake like Jason's neighbor, you can wait. Time, or over time, real estate's going to go up because it's a finite resource, right? So that's what I was going to bring up with your point about the SVB buying into
and
bonds.
And I want to make this clear. Like, I was a stock guy before I was a real estate guy, so I'm not anti-stock. I made a lot of money in stocks, but I gave a lot of money to the government because I was day trading. So that's why I'm in real estate, is because the more money that I make, the more money that I get to promote my local economy by hiring a manager to alleviate some of my time, or by hiring handyman to fix up my houses, or by creating affordable housing for other people to live in. You know, I don't have to be dictated by, I made all this money and it didn't do anything to my local economy, but it made the government richer, right? So I'm not anti-stock. In fact, I still have a lot of money in stocks. My point is taking control of your own life and promoting your local economy and giving money to the local economy rather than the federal economy.
Yeah, I was the same way with you. I was pro stocks mm-hmm. for the longest time, right? And then the COVID thing hit, and I actually was fortunate enough to invest in Moderna and Novavax, and I made a bunch of money, but then I turned around, pulled it out, and then got scared about the stock market crash, and then it didn't crash. So I got back in, and then I lost like 80% of that.
Yeah.
So I decided that it wasn't worth my time and energy, right, to constantly come into work and then like try and day trade a little bit like that. My time was more valuable than to sit in front of the computer and try and make money on the stock market. So switched everything over to a managed account. And then I started to focus my energy on doing numbers in real estate and doing comps and getting in bigger pockets calculator and starting to find properties that I could invest in with that money.
So, Matt, I wanted to bring up something important. You brought us on because we're a bunch of beginners, right? Like we're not experts. I was looking at some of you guys' podcasts and you guys got some excellent people on there. So for the listeners, if you haven't checked it out, like go check out some of their other stuff. They've got professionals on there. We're a bunch of noobs, but in the light of us being noobs, I did want to highlight something that we did this last weekend. So we did another power couple retreat to reevaluate our goals, see where we're at. And we looked at some of our old goals. Holy cow, we did not achieve them all, right? we achieved some, but we all agree that we're way better for it. You know, setting those goals, having an idea of the direction we're going to go, it helped us get to that point. But one of the things that we did, which I think was the most valuable, was we looked at what our net worth is. And I can tell you for sure, December 2015, we were debt-free, my wife and I. So we were at zero, right? Like we had cash in the bank. That was it. Since then, we reevaluated it, and we're at $720,000 of our equity, or is our net worth. So 2015 in December, so what's that, 7 years, like 4 months, right?
Yep.
So that's almost $100,000 a year on average that we've saved up is really how that equates to. If we were to sell all of our assets right now, we have $720,000 that we could just walk away with. So it's kind of cool to see that just some hard work, late nights, kind of like Bryson working, you know, super late, putting some sweat equity in his places, that kind of stuff pays off. So that's kind of our why. That's like our reason to work. You know, after you get done, you know, working all day, flying all night, you come home, you work a little bit of a project, and those hours add up. So what job out there, what W-2 job out there could save you $100,000 every year?
Yeah, or even work for you while you're flying or while you're doing some courses or classes or while you're sleeping even.
Or while you're deployed.
Passive income.
Right, passive income.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that I would tell listeners, right, is to figure out your why, right? Like, why do you, if you do want to leave your W-2 job and invest in real estate, why? Like, figure out that why, set some goals. You know, mine just happens to be generational wealth. Like, I want to leave a legacy and build generational wealth for my kids and my family. And I'm not going to do that with my W-2 job. So that's why I get passionate about real estate and want to figure out how to invest more and more. To figure out how to build a legacy in real estate to pass on to my family,
and part of that legacy is you're building a business, right? It's still in the eyes of the government, like having a bunch of rentals is like a business. You can have your kids work for you, so then they get like on the job training. It's a tax write off as you pay them. That's the kind of stuff that we were talking about mm-hmm. this weekend, which could really benefit your family. So that you know they're getting educated on it. They could still pursue any passion they have, right? If they like, I hope my kids do want to do something like fly airplanes or golf. Caitlin told me not to say that.
Yeah.
But I do hope that they do some, you know, do something else, but they could have this on the side, you know, like as a moneymaker to allow them to free them up to do passion, the yes. stuff they're passionate about.
And hey, if that piqued your interest, there's more on that. Episode 8 with Dan Wright.
Mr. Wright.
Yeah, Mr. Wright. Yeah, listen to that podcast, and it'll teach you all about paying your kids.
Yeah, and bringing them up with a financial education, right? Yeah. Because this isn't something that's taught in schools or universities, like real-world application of financial capitalism in this kind of market. Like, it's freaking amazing. And your kids learn by example, by doing, you know? I grew up in a household where it was like, go to college, do this, do that. Like, okay, well, you didn't go to college. Well, you didn't do this or that, but I'm supposed to do that.
What if we teach them by failing? So we're like, hey, you go to college, and they go to college, and you're like, here's a house. We're going to co-sign on it, help you build your credit, and there's 4 rooms in it. And you stay in one, you rent out the other 3. Whatever you don't make up in rent from the other 3, you have to pay, right? So they can house hack early on. Well, that grows into what if you have 4 houses and 3 of them are rented out? Could it pay for that 4th house? So you don't. Right. You could still house hack with multiple properties.
So experiences, right?
Yeah.
Experiences and living it.
And guess what? They're probably going to fail. They're probably going to like overbalance their checking account. They're probably going to, you know, forget to pay their credit card, their bills. And that's the time to learn is when they're young.
I bounced checks all the time growing up in high school.
Oh, I thought you were going to say
terrible.
Are they going to say like?
Yeah, I
still.
Thought you were going to be like, yeah.
No,
I used to balance.
Yeah, that $25 fee from the bank, all the time.
How embarrassing.
No, I mean I make mistakes all the time. That's how I learn. You learn through failures. So
fail early, fail often,
fail forward.
And he's a pilot now.
Yeah. Not right now. I'm not flying right now.
Well, I mean, Jordan, you actually segued us into our next section. So we always ask our guests, what's one thing somebody can do today to influence the rest of their lives? And it sounded like yours was find your big why. And then, Jordan, you took it over, and yours is fail. You know, start out, fail, rinse, repeat. So, Bryson, tell us, what's one thing our listeners can do today to make their lives substantially better?
I think just setting yourself up for success, really being able to capitalize on the next opportunity. For me, I got pretty lucky because I did invest early on in my life, and I was able to get a nice little equity chunk that it was sitting there for me, and we kept it for a while looking for the next thing that looked like it was going to work for us, and that just happened to be our first property that we picked up.
Yeah. Anyone who knows me knows I don't actually believe in luck. And specifically to your story, like you weren't lucky, man. You had people in your life that you saved. Like as a young kid, you saved up money and they identified that. And you're like, they came to you and they're like, yo, homie, you got money. You can afford a house. You probably don't feel like you can, but you can.
Oh, yeah.
And they set you up.
100%.
What we talk about on the way over, success is just opportunity, meeting.
Sorry. I'm like breathing into it and you're trying to.
You don't remember it? Success is just when opportunity meets good preparation. So being prepared for opportunities to present themselves and taking advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah. If you don't know where to start today, start by saving up. Start by educating yourself. You know, do something. It doesn't cost anything to read a book. It doesn't cost anything to save 30% of your income.
Or listen to the Turnkey Brothers.
Or listen to the Turnkey Brothers.
Shameless
podcast.
Plug.
Find a good realtor,
yeah,
right? Someone that you trust, someone that you can talk about what your goals are, what your numbers are that you wanna hit and can afford. Like, find someone and just start sitting down and having those conversations.
Yeah, surround yourself with people who are smarter than you in the areas that you want to invest in. Right?
That's not hard for Bryson because he's pretty stupid.
Well, I wanna thank you guys so much coming on today because this was a very special podcast for myself and the rest of us in this room. We all started together, you know, and we've made it's amazing what we've achieved in the past 2 years and however many months you said versus the last 15 years of our career. And I couldn't thank you guys enough for being a part of that journey with me or with you, you know, rather. And it's been awesome to see. And I feel like I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but maybe we should have them back on and do like a newbie update, you know, where they are in the future.
Absolutely not. Veto. Yeah, no.
I was going to get excited about that. Shut down.
Yeah.
Sit down.
Yeah. No, I think that would be a great thing. Like maybe a quarterly like check-ins of where they've grown and bringing them in as our W-2 mindset savvy investor newbies.
Yeah, the savvy investor newbies.
Yeah.
Because one thing Kyle touched on was we do a lot of SMART goals. So we've identified something that's measurable and attainable that we can track over time. And when we were talking about net worth, that is definitely something we track over time. We actually started tracking our financial independence too.
That's
sick. And our financial independence calculator, which I'll go over with you guys if you want, but right now we're sitting at 24%. So as a group, we are 24% of the way there to becoming financially free indefinitely.
As a group.
As though. A group.
As a group. And we've been in this, what, 3 years?
Yeah. And I would argue to say that we were probably at like 2% when we started.
Yep.
If that. So real quick, Matt, you're asking what is something you can do to start. I do have to say people think you have to have this perfect plan. Educate yourself. Watch this show. Watch, you know, anything on YouTube. Read books. Do what you can. Once you get to an 80% plan, take that jump. You can fail and you'll be fine. Trust me. at 80% of a plan, you're going to learn stuff as you fail, but you're going to fail forward.
Yep. But did you die? Yep. But did you die?
But did you die? If you ask that question long enough, eventually the answer is yes.
Yeah.
But did you take action in the meantime?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. What did you do? Die a loser or die someone who's failed and eventually succeeded? Or just died someone who tried? You know?
That would be the worst.
That would be the worst thing, I think, on a headstone. It's like, I tried. Like,
Dude, I disagree.
Kyle Sam, I tried.
I disagree. Yeah. I think it would be way
worse. I guess I didn't try.
Yeah,
didn't
yeah. Try. If I die and on my tombstone it says stuck at the finish line, yes. I deserved whatever I got.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on today.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate having you.
Thanks, Matt.
Yep. And we'll see you guys next time.
Matthew.
Matt Attack.
Hey, everyone. We're the Turnkey Brothers, and thanks for tuning in with us today.
Guys, make sure to bump up our algorithm with those likes, subscribes, share it with somebody that you think would benefit from this episode.
And don't forget to follow us on your favorite social media platforms at Turnkey Brothers. Till next time.